Welcome to the show From Ground to Great, a business, aviation, and personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Ruiz Jimenez, and today we have Grant Chastain on the mic. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me.
Good, man. Good. If you you guys didn't know, Grant and I are not just really good, like best friends from, I want to say junior high. Right? We met in junior high.
I think we actually originally met in church
back in the day,
but we weren't really like super good friends back then.
Yeah. First Baptist Church.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you remember seeing me at First Baptist Church, or is it your parents that are like, oh, I remember seeing Daniel, or?
Vaguely. I feel like I remember seeing you, but, you know, that was back probably in like fourth grade or something. So it's, you know, that's been what, 10 years now? I mean, it's been a long time.
It's been a while, dude.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, Payne Barksdale?
Yeah,
his dad used to be, like, one of the, I guess, pastors slash, what would you call it? Like, kid, like, took care of the kids, too, for the morning service.
Yeah. Was he, I think he was one for the teenage group, was it? Or was it?
No, he was for, like, our age group,
dude.
Oh,
it was? Okay.
Yeah. Because I remember him. I don't remember Payne. I just remember his dad. I don't know if you remember him from church as well or seeing him. He looks like him, though, kind of. Like, he's, like, tall, like, kind of skinny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's in the, he's actually, he's, like, a fighter pilot now.
Payne is?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
He did the whole, he went through the Air Force Academy, and now he's rocking jets. I don't know what jet it is. It's on his story, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, man, that's pretty awesome. Yeah, I got a lot of respect for people who go into that career field.
Yeah, man, yeah, I mean, you gotta put in work, you know, just, well, it's a lot, you know, a lot you have to go through, I imagine. Did your dad do the academy?
Yeah. So as far as I know, I know he didn't fly fighter pilots, but he did do the, cargo planes. I don't remember, what the exact plane was, you know, but I know he flew in Desert Storm, cause he was in the reserves for the Air Force for about 20 years. And so that's basically cause like when he grew up, he couldn't afford to get like his pilot license and do the hours, you know? So the way he did it was he went into the Air Force Academy first and then, got his hours through that, you know, was in the reserves for, about 20 years. And then he retired and became a commercial pilot after that. So that was kind of his pathway to get into, because he always wanted to be a commercial pilot, you know. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, like, he, you know, it was kind of a win-win because he could do Air Force, you know, he could serve the country. And then he could also, you know, have his dream of being a pilot, you know. So it kind of worked out good for him.
Yeah. Can you try pointing the mic just a little bit closer? Yeah, like that.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, sorry about that.
No, you're good. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do that, too, because, like, flight school is expensive, man. It's super expensive. Shoot, I mean, I dropped probably, like, $20K on the, you know, and it took twice as long. I took twice as long getting my license just because, like, when you're taking a lot of breaks because of financial reasons and weather is a big factor, too, I mean, just you lose the muscle memory that you've gained in all those times of absence that you're not flying, you know.
That's fair, and especially in something like that, it's all about consistency.
Yeah,
so yeah, you're taking time off, it makes it harder to stay focused.
Yeah. Did you hear about the guy who was on Horizon Air and he tried pulling the fire extinguishers on the flight?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, so he was backseating for someone. This guy, he was an Alaska Airlines pilot, but he was backseating a Horizon Air flight, and he's. He tried pulling, like, these red handles that shoot out this agent, extinguishing agent, in the engines. And if you do that, like, there's no way to restart the engine or anything. It's, like, done, you know? Because it's, like, imagine foam, like, right? Like, if you get, like, an actual fire extinguisher, imagine that, but going into the engine. Like, there's no way to recover that, you know? And later on, like, they were able to stop him. But later on, he was like, oh, sorry, man. Like, I was high on shrooms, so.
Man, was he an employee or just a passenger?
Well, I think he was just able to, like, pilots are able to just, like, backseat flights, like the jumper seat.
Right.
I don't know if Horizon Air has an affiliation with Alaska Airlines. Like, if it, like, feeds in, like, if it's a feeder into into Alaska or not. Like, you know, like, I believe SkyWest feeds into, oh, shoot, I don't remember. I want to say it's United. SkyWest feeds into United. Like, those shorter flights are going to be SkyWest flights to take you to a main hub. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you take the big plane, like a big Boeing or something. And you'll go to your final destination usually.
I think that's similar to, I know American Airlines, they have American Eagle, you know, for the short flights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, it's the one my parents take when they commute to work.
Yes.
Yeah, usually from Sacramento to LA, it's like an hour and a half flight, so they do American Eagle.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, so those are the ones that, those are the newer pilots. So the newer pilots usually are on those called regionals.
Right.
And so once they get more experience and stuff, then they'll start flying, like, the main big, you know, 747s, 777s.
Yeah, yeah, got to start them out small. Yeah. Some easier flights.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's tough when you start out as a pilot, from what I understand. You know, you have to work a lot of holidays, and, you know, you don't have really good seniority, right? I mean, you probably know about this, you know, and so you don't really get a choice in a lot of the flights that you work, right, for the first few years. And then once you start building the seniority, you get, you know, you move up in the company, and then you start getting better and better choice of the trips you want to do. And, you know, you don't have to miss your kid's birthday and Christmas and all this stuff that you don't want to miss, you know.
Yeah, yeah, you get shit on, man. Yeah.
Yeah, from what I understand.
And you get shit pay, too. Like, I have someone who, so you need 1,500 hours to even go to, like, a regional, pretty much. Like, people say the airlines, because it is going to be the airlines, but you're going to go in the regionals, not, like, the big boys.
Yeah.
Or something that feeds into the big boys, right? But I know someone that is flying. I don't remember what the feeder is, but he basically island hops in Hawaii. He gets shit pay for, like, the first, I want to say, like, year. But then it exponentially grows and grows and grows for the more time you get. But that was his plan, because he didn't have enough money to keep paying for flight training. He has commercial license, but, like, he just couldn't get those hours, you know?
Yeah. Understandable.
And he had a family and everything, too. So, like, his family was going to stay in Florida. This was in Florida. We're in Davis, California right now. He's in just Hawaii. And then his family is taking care of his wife and their kids, you know, while he's grinding out in Hawaii, just, you know, just shipping it back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man, big ups to him. I hope he can get his hours in and make his dream a reality.
Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he was, there was a weight requirement, too, because he was flying the caravans.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a little bit up there, not by much, but, you know, he was up there. So he, like, had a very methodical plan, and he was able to accomplish that to go get the job, because it was, like, not be- – I don't want to say it's not because he wanted to be more fit, but it was, like – like, I have a family, you know, like, and I have, like, I can't do this job because of the legal weight requirement as a pilot, you know, and all the cargo or passengers that I'm going to fly. So he got it done, you know, which is really impressive. I forgot how many pounds he lost, but it was like a good amount, you know.
Yeah, that's the motivation right there.
Yeah.
That's good motivation.
Yeah, yeah, it is good motivation, man. Yeah. Instead of, like, because you have that external factor, right, that's, like, driving you to, how can I say it? Like, to get to where you need to be, you know? It's not just, like, coming from within you. It's something outside. It's like, oh, well, you know, I got bills to pay.
Yeah.
You know, I got mouths to feed, you know?
Yeah, no, when people are desperate, especially when it involves their families, you know, they'll be surprised at what they're capable of.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, the same scenario where it's, like, the mom, like, picks up the car, right, and like, the kids underneath it, or it's in, you know, the kids in danger, and you get mom strength.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, how'd that happen, dude? You're like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, they don't know. Yeah, yeah. It's just something in their brain. It's like, they don't even realize it's happening until after it's done. It's like, whoa, like, how was I able to do that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works, because it's like, you know, like, I would think, like, an average guy can't just pick up a car either like that, you know? And it seems like these women don't have any prior gym experience or anything, and they're just able to, you know, just pop it up.
Yeah, I mean,
like, good for them, you know? Yeah.
You're like 130, 140 pounds, and you lift up a car that's, you know, at least a ton, if
right?
not 2 tons. Yeah,
right?
That's you
know?
Pretty impressive.
Well, where does it come from, you know?
It's, yeah, like, I don't know. You should actually check out, so there's this show, kind of like a docuseries on Netflix, basically. It's called Unexplained with William Shatner. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I think I've heard the title.
Yeah.
Or seen it on Netflix, at least.
It's really good. Yeah. It's like a 16-episode series, and they talk about all sorts of stuff like this. And one of the episodes that they do, I believe, if I remember correctly, is about, like, superhuman strength like that, you know, with in the moment, like, something like, yeah, this someone's kid is trapped under a car or, you know, a bunch of different scenarios. And it's like, it's kind of just analyzes, like, all these, you know, they interview people and analyze, like, you know, what's going on in their brains and try to figure it out. And, you know, they can't figure it out, right? They can't explain it because that's why it's unexplained. But it's really cool because, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. Like, one of my favorite ones was the, there was this guy basically who, he was at a college party and, you know, he's just kind of a frat dude, kind of, I mean, decent at school, but he's not really, you know, like, gifted in anything per se, right? And so he's at a pool party and he jumps off of this diving board and, I guess he kind of slips when he's jumping off and he hits his head on the side of the pool and it's like, boom, like blood in the water, like really bad, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like his friends call 911. Everyone's freaking out. They're like, oh my God, you know? And like they take him to the hospital. And I believe he had to have surgery on his head and he wakes up about a day or two later because he was in like a medically induced coma, I believe. And when he wakes up, he was telling the doctors, he's like, I keep seeing like these weird like visions in the air. And they're like, what do you mean? He's like, I keep seeing these like bars, these like black bars coming down like in front of my eye, like in front of my eyesight, like black bars coming down everywhere. And he's like, I don't know what they are. They couldn't tell him. They're like, oh, you must just have head trauma. You know, you should go home and rest basically.
Yeah.
And so he went home and I guess his parents had a piano there that they didn't really play very often. And so he kind of just randomly goes and sits at the piano and he starts to play it. Keep in mind, he's never touched a piano in his life.
Yeah.
Not once. He starts to play these like these songs by like Mozart and stuff, these insane songs.
Yeah.
And they can't explain it because he never had touched a piano before. He doesn't know how to read music. But whatever he was, those things that he was seeing
little
in his
bars,
eyes, those were somehow they were related to piano. And he was able to play these songs that, and now he's a professional piano player. He plays shows all around the world. He's like world famous and no prior experience on piano. And it wasn't until he hit his head, came back from that now all of a sudden, I mean, yeah. He's a piano maestro.
Do you know what part of the brain that got hit or got trauma?
I don't, to be honest. I don't remember that specific part. Because I know other than the piano thing, obviously, like he didn't really have any other like lasting injuries. You know, like he was okay. Like he had to have like the surgery and stuff, but he didn't have any other like lasting damage to his brain. I mean, I guess, you know, whatever that was must have been some form of damage because that doesn't just come out of nowhere.
No.
But that actually has happened to a few people. I forgot what they call it, but there's a term for it basically where people have had injuries like that, like what he had. And then, though, a lot of times it involves instruments. And when I say a lot of times, it's not super common, but when it does happen, it's like an instrument thing. Like I think there's someone else who, same with violin, you know?
Yeah.
And there's these different things. It's not maestro syndrome. It's something syndrome, I believe, where it's like, yeah, it's like they have an injury. And then that causes, you know, them to just be super gifted in some specific area of, you know, human endeavor.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so interesting, man. It's like you got, like, untapped potential. And your mind can do – I mean, people say – there's a movie where it's like, oh, like, people only use this amount of your brain, you know. But, like, no, you use 100% of your brain. But it's so interesting because stuff like that makes you really think. It's like – am I really using all of my brain? You know, like,
yeah.
Like how come this like trauma to my head is made, or like I've heard like lightning strikes will do the same stuff to people, you know, and then they get these incredible abilities. And I've also heard it related to music. So I don't know what it is with music and like your brain being able to just perceive. I mean, I think it's something that's very unique to humans.
I agree.
Like, We can make a story almost, like an emotional story out of listening to music as opposed to like a parrot. Like a parrot can imitate something or it can listen to music. However, it's just like waves of noise. Almost like imagine hearing like static noise on a radio or on a TV, but you're just hearing different kinds of those different waves. And you hear them together, but it, like it doesn't create a story in your head. You just hear this noise going on. And so humans have a very, like, we're really unique in that way where we're able to kind of interpret it into something that gives more of a profound meaning. You know, like in movies, that's the whole point. They put music in movies, right?
Yeah. It really sets like the vibe for whatever,
yeah,
you know, you're experiencing, whether it be like a horror movie, an action scene, you know, a love scene, whatever it might be. It's like, yeah, the music plays a big role, you know, in conveying like the emotion of whatever you're seeing on screen,
yeah,
or just in life in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so interesting. Yeah, I think there's more to. I feel like if people were to get superpowers, just from you saying this, and this is totally not backed up from anything that I've like, you know, seen. But I wonder if like the key for human superpowers has to do with music, you know. There's something, you know, the Monroe Institute?
I've heard of it, but I'm not really familiar.
You've heard of the Gateway Experience, though, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So the ones that conducted that was the Monroe Institute. And so they say that through the process of binaural beats, which is being able to use your left and your right hemisphere of your brain, basically, if you put two frequencies on either side of your ear, right, one on your left, one on your right, they can cancel each other out or mask each other in a way where you get a new frequency that you might not be able to play necessarily that's audible, right? And then from there, your brain really likes to match like wavelengths. It just has a very natural tendency to do that, so they're able to. I guess they put you in different states of mind where you're more susceptible to be able to. In the gateway experience, their whole thing on the paper is being able to like escape time and reality and like talk to beings and stuff, which is pretty interesting.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, but they use the medium, right, of like these binaural beats to then have a narrator like to talk them through of like how to calm down your body and then be able to heighten your mind to be able to do this stuff, you know. And then again, I've never heard of anyone successfully being able to do this, so I don't know. It was just an FBI survey that, or
CIA,
no, CIA, maybe? Yeah, thank you, thank you. It was CIA survey that they were doing to try to explain to see if like this would help them and try to understand like what their meaning behind it is and if it's something worth taking into account for the Department of Defense.
So yeah, those guys do some pretty messed up stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, MK Ultra. I mean, all this stuff. It's yeah. I mean, the fact that they experimented on people with LSD. You know, back in the I believe it was in the 1970s.
Yeah,
you're probably familiar with that.
Yeah, there's a movie. Not super related, but kind of related. It's something about the men who stare at goats or something like that. Have you heard of that? It's a funny story that's based on an actual true story.
I don't think I'm familiar with it actually, no.
Okay. So they were like, same thing, like they were trying to integrate some like mind Jedi tricks, or the CIA was, and put it into the military. And supposedly the scene is, right, these guys staring into a goat, and just by staring at it, like it's able to just concentrate into its eyes and stop the goat's heart, and then it just drops dead on the floor.
Okay, yeah, that actually sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
I might have seen a scene from it or something.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Sounds
so,
super
so
familiar.
It's based on a true story, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there's accounts of it, right? But it's funny because in the movie, it's like, well, some of it's kind of just for, like, shits and giggles, but, you know, some of the stuff really happened, you know? And then we're like, no, we're not kidding, you know? Some of the stuff really happened. Because it's such a bizarre movie. And then at the end, I guess I'll kind of spoil it. I mean, if you haven't seen it, whatever. But they're at this base or something. They go and navigate some space. And they're like, this one guy that used to be one of these like Jedi people that used to stare at goats and stuff or whatever. he gets a calling to go to the desert, and they find this base, and they like drug everybody. They put LSD in the water at this like military base. Because they were harming more goats to try to like make the experiment bigger. And so like they add water, LSD to the water, and like everyone's like tripping, you know, on you know, tripping balls and
yeah. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah, man, that sounds like an interesting movie. Do you know if that was made around the same, is that like an older movie or is that like a newer?
No, this newer is thing? Like, I mean, like the graphics are good, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, it's like real actors and stuff, but I want to say maybe it looks like a 2010 kind of movie, probably. Okay. Or like around that area, give or take 5 years on either side.
And you were saying that that is based on a true story, and is that something that the CIA was also doing with the that's pretty crazy
right? yeah the stuff that the CIA does. I think it's because they were incentivized by the Russians too, right?
Yeah,
because they were on the same wavelength of trying to do something about that.
Yeah, I don't know as much about the Russians doing that,
yeah,
but I know they did do a lot of the similar stuff. Like, yeah, you've probably heard of the famous like Russian sleep experiment.
No,
they did. So I don't remember the year, so I don't want to just say, because I honestly don't know. But this was a long time ago. If I had to guess, I'd say 1960s roughly.
Uh-huh.
And it's still kind of like a rumor whether or not what actually happened is true. But there's these pictures floating around online that nobody knows whether or not they're real. But essentially, what happened was, the Russian, I think it was during the Cold War, if I'm not mistaken, and these Russian scientists, they wanted to experiment. Basically, they wanted a way to keep soldiers awake for long periods of time, you know, because we all know that, like, you know, if you stay awake for, I think, I don't know the time, but it's like the longer you stay awake, you know, like, you know, they compare it to being intoxicated to alcohol.
Yes.
And it gets worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Like, if you're up for like 4 or 5 days straight, I mean, it's like you have serious problems, like, mentally. And so they developed this new drug, basically, to give to these soldiers in the experiment. And they locked them all in a room. And basically, it was a gas. And they kept pumping the gas in the room. And these guys, basically, as it goes, the story is that they were awake for, I want to say, some of them was like up to like 2 weeks with no sleep. And basically started going like psychotic and like
eating each
other and like all this crazy like stuff. Like, again, it's not confirmed, right, because it was a Russian thing. We don't know 100%, but that's basically how it goes. And there's these pictures online of these guys that look like almost like aliens. Like, their faces are all, like black, and, like, you know, they have giant eyes, and, like, they look like almost like, yeah, like from, like, a horror movie or something, you know? Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's so nuts, because, like, I know, like, I feel like everybody knows just internally, like, you need sleep, right? But technically, the body, it's like, I mean, a lot of stuff happens when you're sleeping. You know, you're able to recollect and understand and actually process the information of learning. Like, when you learn, it's actually when you go to sleep where everything gets really solidified and stuff. And there's cues to in the waking world that you can use that in nighttime you can help to apply. I guess that's going kind of towards personal growth. But it's weird because we don't really know exactly, like, why we go crazy without sleep. Like, it still needs to be studied. Like, obviously, we just, like, kind of know, but we don't really know if that makes sense. Like, there's no indicators showing that we would get messed up if we don't go to sleep. However, we see cases where if you don't go to sleep, that, you know, that happens, right? You get all loopy, and people have experienced it, right?
The most common one is especially around major cities, you know, with methamphetamine use.
Okay.
Yeah, these people
are just up all night.
I mean, yeah, they are. Yeah, they'll go on these binges for multiple days, and I mean, not only are they destroying their mind with the drug itself, right? Yeah. But then they go on these 3, 4, 5 day binges, and they're just, I mean, they go psychotic.
They're
a
wired.
Lot of times.
Yeah. It's not just from the meth; it's probably from the lack of sleep. It's probably going to be a combination.
It's a whole combination, right? Yeah. It's just a vicious cycle, right?
Yeah,
you know, you keep doing it, keep staying up.
It's a little one-two action. Yeah. Oh, that's funny, man.
Yeah.
You want to talk about? Let's talk about Davis Vending Company. You want to explain it? You want to explain what it is, what we're trying to do, and what you do and stuff.
Yeah. So let's see. So basically, this was about back in July, I want to say, we started.
Yeah.
The idea and stuff. Yeah, Daniel had gotten back from Florida not too long before that, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And we were talking about business ideas, you know, kind of bouncing back and forth.
We had Kava. Yeah, we had Kava.
Yeah, I want to say we were...
Or it was the little shots.
These Kava shots, and we were drinking, and we were just kind of bouncing ideas off of each other for what we thought to do for, like, a business, you know. And if I remember correctly, Daniel actually, I'll give him credit. He was the one who came up with the idea for Davis Vending Co., if I'm not mistaken. And he was basically, you know, his idea was like, you know, a lot of times when you go around town or really anywhere, right, you see these vending machines that are just these old beat up vending machines that, you know, it'll do these, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about, like the Coca-Cola ones that are all beat up and, you know, they got 4 drink selections and, you know, you still got to put cash in them and it's just kind of out of date, right? And it's like, in the modern world that we're living in, you look around, everything is, you know, modernized and streamlined, you know. I mean, Apple Watches, iPhones, like, everything is very, very, you know, convenient for people, right? And those machines weren't convenient. So his idea was basically, you know, let's modernize the vending machine, you know, which I thought was super cool. And so the idea was that we basically buy these, you know, much nicer vending machines, and they're focused around credit card readers, right? So you don't, you know, because most people don't carry cash now. You know, I don't know the exact number, but most people don't carry cash now from you know, what we understand. And so everyone has credit cards and, you know, Apple Pay on their phone and their watches. And, you know, so it's like, why not make vending machines with credit card readers, right? And so people, you know, it's much more convenient for them. They don't have to go to the bank and get cash, or if they don't have, you know, oh, no, I can't get a snack. It's like, it's much easier for them. And on top of that, we also wanted to, you know, have like a lot of like healthier snacks and stuff. And not only just snacks, but also like convenience items like charging cables, you know, condoms, like all sorts of like convenience items that you'd get at like your typical 7-Eleven. And yeah, so that's basically about it. We just kind of want to modernize all that and focus on mainly apartment buildings, because, you know, that's where a lot of the UC Davis students here are concentrated. So we figured, you know, that's probably a really good place to have them. And yeah, so we're trying to get all around town and have the have them in every building. Yeah, kind of build a name for ourselves.
Yeah. And so we won't say their name, but hopefully we're getting a vending machines in somewhere soon. You know,
they in said, negotiations now.
We are in the negotiation phase. I mean, it sounds like when we went into the building, they were like, "Oh, you're Davis Vending Co." You know, they're like, "Oh, you're the." Well, they didn't say that. They're like, "Oh, you're the vending machine guys." That's more along the lines of what they said. But yeah. They're definitely excited, you know. At least they knew about it, you know. They didn't see him like it was like, oh, you know, it's you guys.
Yeah. I think we've been making good steps too. You know, we got a solid website built. Credits to Daniel for that.
Thank you, man.
And then we've been, I think, doing a good job of building a social media presence. You know, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. You know, we're doing a lot of cool like AI posts and stuff, and you know, environmental stuff and healthy snacks and all that good stuff. So I think, you know, I think we're building a good name for ourselves in Davis. You know, because that was kind of our goal, is because, you know, a lot of even other people that I know in the past or have heard of that do vending machine businesses, you know, it's not like it is technically like a business, but it's more like, you know, they just buy a few machines. They don't even really have like a business name or anything.
There's no name behind it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So they just throw them in there and it's like, oh, and a lot of times they charge the building themselves to even have their machine in it. Mm-hmm. So it's like I come to you basically, and this is me as them. I'd be like, OK, so I have this vending machine that's old and beat up. I want you to pay me to have this in there, and I'm going to collect all the profits from you, right? So the building's
it's
just
like...
It's
a win-win, I swear.
Yeah. The building's just like, dude, like, why would I do that, right? So the reason that I think ours is also a little bit better is because what we're doing is we're... when we put the machine in, you know, we're not charging them for that, right? So we are providing a service to the people at the building, you know, which we've conveyed that, and I think they understand that and are very receptive to it. And so all we're basically asking is that they pay for the electricity, right, for the machine, you know, which is, if you look at it over a year, it's like, you know, anywhere from 300, right-ish.
Less, yeah.
Even less than that. So it's
not really pennies on the dollar, if you think about
exactly, it. Exactly, right, yeah, for these companies. And, you know, so we're not charging them anything else. And, we're providing a pretty good service to their students, you know, because a lot of these buildings don't have anything similar to that already. You know, there's no vending machines, no, any way to get like snacks or convenience items there, you know. I mean, obviously you have DoorDash, which is what I do a lot of times to make extra money, but and I do like it a lot, but then it's like, you know, a lot of these, you know, you have to pay a fee for that, right? And so it's much more expensive. And that's the cool thing about the vending machine is, you know, we can get stuff for very cheap and then also sell it for cheap.
Yeah.
And still have a good profit margin.
Yeah.
Right?
Without a delivery fee. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and delivery like, fee, no tip, nothing.
You know,
yeah.
For a condom, you have to wait how long for a delivery?
Dude, it depends.
Sometimes you just need it now.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
in
no.
the vending machine, you know.
Sometimes people's stuff don't get delivered too.
Yeah. Or sometimes they'll take the food.
Yeah,
we won't say anything more than that.
Yeah. Certain someone that we, yeah. or some people that we
yeah,
know.
Yeah, some people, yeah.
Yeah.
So not always very reliable.
Yeah, there's a lot of criminal activity going on relating to DoorDash.
That's so ridiculous, bro. Like, dude, it's your job, man. Like, why are you going to try to, like, finesse these people, you know?
Yeah.
And, I won't go more into that.
Yeah, so let's just say, we are going to make everyone's life easier with this, I think.
And the biggest thing, I think it's the brand that what you were talking about. And I guess this kind of cultivated itself the more, because Grant and I have learned a lot from business just trying to start everything up, and just how operations work and logistics and networking and making a presence for yourself. And Really, I like the idea that we have accountability. So, like, if for some reason, I mean, we took over, like, I want to say 2 months worth to even get a really good list foundation. And the whole point is that students can go and vote and change later on what items they want in their
voting
machines.
Yes, good point. I forgot to mention that.
But, like, we've taken a long time into account for that. But for some reason, if the experience is not good for you or it's shitty, well, guess what? We have accountability. Like, our logo is on the vending machine as opposed to just, like, Coca-Cola or, like, Pepsi, you know? And it's like, oh, well, who really owns the vending? Like, who are the actual people running these vending machines? You know, they're all busted up. They look ugly. And it looks like they haven't been maintained in forever, and they're just putting food in there with cobwebs. So it's like, well, what number do I call? Who do I call to, like, you know?
Yeah, it eats your $5 bill, you know?
You're not getting it back. Yeah, hungry vending machine. But at least you're like, oh, okay, well, Davis Vending Co., they're a really good service, you know? Like, they're the ones that run these machines. Maybe I didn't have a good service, but I know who to talk to improve it, right? So
exactly.
That's the factor. We want to – I think really we've involved more about service, and our goal is to really try to tailor the experience as much to our customers as possible. And get constant feedback. It's not just a one and done kind of thing. It's that we're constantly trying to improve the business by getting people's feedback, by seeing what kind of stuff, because we have a charity pull too on the website where a portion of the money that we make will go to a charity. So we'll see what kind of charities people choose to want to put money into. We have like a QR code on there where people can scan it and tell us what they think about the service or what I said, the food. So definitely tailoring it. And it's always a constant thing that needs attention. It's not something that we just leave there and we just put food in and that's it.
Yeah.
So we were talking about how we fit like different needs of the customers based on where they're at. So depending on where they're at. And it's like, it's not even that we adjust it accordingly. The only thing that we really adjust is, like, for example, for Davis, a lot of people bike. So we have, like, these bike tire patch kits that you're able to buy, and boom. Yeah, that's something specific, right? But, like, really, what we're saying, if, like, any kind of people live there or anything, the food is going to get changed eventually to what that suits their, like, specific tastes.
Makes people more likely to actually buy stuff from the machine when it's stuff that they legitimately want.
Yeah, because I can put whatever in there and they're like, oh, well, I'm not really having it, but they have the option.
Right? Yeah.
There's no thing that I can think of that, or other company, vending machine company that does that.
Yeah, I agree. Most of them, like you said, they don't really care. You know, it's just like, I'll just throw this in, collect what money I can. No customer service, no accountability, like you said. You know, so yeah, I think it's a really cool idea.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, me too. You want to talk about like how you got into business or why it's something that you're interested in or why you like it?
Yeah, so it was, I don't know, I've always kind of been interested in business overall, you know. I grew up as a kid, you know, watching a lot of like Shark Tank, you know, like a lot of people, and I always thought it was so cool, you know, to be able to work for yourself, you know, and not have to work for these big corporations, you know, and, you know, everything that goes into that. I think it's really cool to kind of have the freedom, you know, to work for yourself. And what I really like about it is, you know, it's kind of as hard as you want to go, right? Like, how successful do you want to be? You know what I mean? There's really no limit, right? It's as much work as you want to put in, as much networking as you want to do. I mean, you get to decide how successful you want to be, essentially, right? And that's why I think that's really cool. Because there's, you know, infinite opportunities in the world, right? And so many people nowadays, I just kind of watch and they don't really even explore anything like that. You know, a lot of people are just okay with just like, oh, you know, I even know certain people, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm cool working minimum wage, you know, as long as I have money for rent and food, it's like, that's it, you know, that's kind of all that, and that they're cool with that, you know? And that always just kind of like, I was kind of like, you know, I'm not cool with that. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to just be like a slave, so to speak, to the world we live in, you know? So I always wanted to, I thought it'd be really cool to have freedom, you know, and how do you achieve that freedom is by becoming financially independent, you know, which it's a lot of work and it's very hard, obviously, you know, but you have to start somewhere and I think you have to learn. That's why I think it's really cool that we're doing this now because, you know, we're like you said, we're learning a lot of things that, you know, I had no idea, you know. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know a lot about business, and it's like there's all these licenses you need and all this, you know, all this stuff you need to do very specifically, you know.
Super specific, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good learning experience, you know, and this is going to lead to other things down the road. And I think it's really good too, because this is something we can get into for, you know, a small financial risk, right? Mm-hmm. Versus a lot of these other businesses and things that people do, they'll invest all their money or a ton of their money, you know, and they don't even know whether or not it's going to work, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously you never know whether or not it's going to work,
but if
that's the case, then I think you should, you know, take a smaller financial risk, right? So then if it doesn't work out, then you're not completely screwed, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think, just kind of growing up, you know, watching Shark Tank and stuff and going through school, you know, it's not that I wasn't good at school, you know, but I always just kind of felt like, you know, what is this really going to accomplish, you know? And I know, at least for me, you know, a lot of the times when I was in school, like, yeah, I just kind of felt like, you know, obviously there's some good stuff they teach you, but a lot of it was kind of just like, you know, when am I ever going to use this, right? I know that's a common thing that people say, but I mean, especially now since I've graduated high school, like, I've noticed like a lot of the stuff I haven't needed, you know, and haven't used. So I think, you know, I think it's the best experience you can get is real world experience, yeah. Right? Not school experience, you know? And I know for certain career fields and stuff like college is...
Or like very, doctor. Like if you're going to be a doctor, please go to school.
Very beneficial.
If you're going to be a lawyer,
yeah. It's like you
go
have
to.
You kind of have to. Right? So, yeah. But if you're just going general like business and you kind of want to see what you can do, then I think the best possible experience you can get is real world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is find a mentor, go out in the real world and do things.
Yeah.
And that can be in any field. Even if you're going to school to be a doctor or a lawyer, find a mentor, do real world stuff. Don't just party every night. And get that experience while you're going to school. But there's so many other like business is a good one where you go out in the world after high school and you learn nothing about it, and you're really on your own. I mean, the nice thing about the time that we live in now is that your mentor doesn't necessarily have to be in person yet. And of course, that's going to be the best kind of mentor you have. But if you find a really good YouTube channel or YouTube is an incredible resource, or maybe there's a blogger or something on a website and you follow the steps. A lot of the times it's like people, if you read stuff that has like a nice outline of what to do, if you really follow that, like most of the time they're pretty fail proof. You know, there might be some external stuff that's just life, right? But if you follow the steps, you'll always, like, that's something I learned when I did aircraft maintenance over in Florida. People don't know how to follow instructions. It's so underrated. It's like people will pay money to have their IKEA furniture assembled, you know? They don't follow instructions.
Very true.
There's pictures. There's numbers, you know? it's like, what more do you want, dude?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's and it gets more complicated when you go into aircraft maintenance and you don't have to go to school. You can do an apprentice program, which honestly, I would recommend doing either one. Either one's good. I think you should do both, actually. You should find an apprentice program and go to the school at the same time. Because you get to... Sometimes in the workforce, everything's kind of quick. You know, you need to push stuff out. And that's the quickest way to learn, right? But also to be in an environment where you're sitting down and you're actually being able to learn all the words. And, well, it's called nomenclature of, like, certain parts and stuff of an aircraft is going to help you when you get in those high stressful situations, right? Like, oh, we got to push this airplane out now. We got to fix this. Okay. Then you kind of have a little pool of knowledge in the back of your head that you can push forward and use. At least you know a little bit more. But following instructions, if you follow the instructions on an aircraft manual, the airplane's going to get fixed. Now, there's some stuff where, like, maybe a bolt is, like, stripped. Maybe it's seized. Maybe the part broke off or something. Maybe you dropped a screw where you weren't supposed to, right? And you have to pick up the screw, because if it goes into like a component that's moving, you're gonna kill a family, you know?
Yeah, right,
So that's life, right? The screw falling is life, But if you follow the instructions on that manual, that there's a lot of good books out there that give you these instructions, and these mentors lay out these instructions for you. If you follow those, you're gonna make it. You know, it's gonna get done, right?
It's a matter of actually following it.
It's a matter of actually following through. Some people go in life and they're motivated and they're like, okay, let's do it. Okay, I'm step one. Yeah, now I'm step two. And then, I don't feel so motivated anymore. It's getting kind of hard. And
consistency, I think, is one of the biggest things one of the things that a lot of successful people have in common, or I'd say the majority of them, is consistency.
Yeah.
In every regard.
Yeah. I don't think it's so much about the motivation factor. It's getting up whether you want to or not.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, there's certain tricks you can use to be able to influence yourself to go and do it, like a good night's sleep. Very underrated.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty much the bit. Like, if you're able to change sleep, diet, exercise, you probably can get away with just those three things, and you don't have to worry about these Jedi mind tricks, which are, I mean, they're like psychology based, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you an example. I listen to the Huberman Lab podcast a lot. He's a neuroscientist over at Stanford, and I highly recommend that podcast. We're not sponsored by him or anything, but he's a great, like, I always listen to him on the way to school. And he's a great form of just like being able to turn science, and instead of just like in school, right, in high school, they just give you all these facts. They're like, well, how are the facts going to help me in my life? You know, where's the step plan of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that I can follow and I can see progress, right? And so he mentions that if you wake up and you're you feel motivated to go out, let's say, I do jiu-jitsu in the morning, and I just went at 6 in the morning today. Let's say I wake up motivated, right, to go on and conquer the world. I should reinforce that feeling by thinking of the end goal, which would be being a better human being, getting a black belt maybe, I can defend myself better, whatever. There's also like a lot of mental skills and stuff that you learn. But let's say I wake up and I don't feel motivated. Well, you should actually think about how it would feel like in your mind to have not gone, like how shitty the feeling is, and internalize it. Like, imagine yourself, what if I didn't go? And so it's like a fear factor. And then you're like, okay, now for the rest of the day, I'm going to feel like a piece of shit for not going. Scientifically, that is proven to help you to go up and do the thing, even though you're not so motivated, because now you do have a motivation factor, but it's a different kind of motivation. It's like a more of a fear factor, as opposed to, like, if you didn't want to get up and go to practice or the gym, and you think about the end goal and result, scientifically, it's not going to help you as much or at all, as opposed to you thinking about the negative side of things. Of what if I didn't go? What if I don't go today and put an hour of my time? How would I feel like for the rest of the day? You know,
that's a really good point. Actually, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And then another good question to ask yourself too is like, if I don't do that, then how will I be using that time? Mm-hmm. Right? Am I just going to waste it watching TV or, you know, on something else that really doesn't benefit me in the long run? You know, and then I think that, like you said, it almost it's like a cycle. You know, you feel worse, and then you don't have as much motivation, and it kind of just keeps going.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, for stuff and goals that you set yourself, like, 50%, you've been taught in school. I mean, I'm talking as a we're both talking as like 21-year-olds. Like, what do we know? We're naive. But 50%, and I've talked to my professor, though, in business, and we were both saying, like, 50% is a lot. Like, if you're able to improve yourself 50% more than you were yesterday or in a week, you know how crazy that is, dude? You're 50% better than you were yesterday or a week ago. So let's say for some reason you go to the gym, right? And you want to go every single day or 6 days a week, right? You miss 3 days. You're still 50% better, you know? And that's not an excuse for telling yourself not to go to the gym. But you shouldn't, like, you know, still use those tactics, right? Like, if you're not motivated, okay, what does it feel like?
Use positive motivation.
Yeah. Like, okay, I'm not motivated to go to the gym. Still use the fear factor, right, that we're talking about, that Andrew Huberman talks about on his podcast. But even if for some reason there's something that goes on, you're still wet for 50% of the week. Now, we can get it to more, and ideally, you want to fill your goals, right? Like, you say you're going to do something, you better do it. That's just business, too, you know, keep your word. But 50% is a lot, as opposed to not going at all for the entire week, you know, to the gym or practice or class or work, you know. So that's not an excuse to tell you not to do it, you know. Just know that we've been hardwired where, like, an F, right, which is 50%, is like, oh, my God, dude, this is terrible, right? It's like, no, yeah. Dude, like, yeah. You're in an academic setting, but it's like the real world doesn't work that way, you know. Now, if you're trying to go into a professor and your world is academia, then yes, that is your world, you know. Unfortunately, you don't experience the other 95% of what the world is like.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But in reality, that's just how it is, you know.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can get, like, it's good to be book smart, you know, but I think it's even more important to be, like, street smart in general. When I say that, you know, in, like, business and just dealing with people in the world, you know, like, yeah, you need to have real world experience for whatever it is you want to do. I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I think too, it's like a lot of people will, and I'm not like roasting anybody, right? A lot of people will have like great wealth of information, but they're not applying it. Knowledge isn't power. It's how you apply it, you know, in the different circumstances. Now, same Huberman Lab podcast, they're talking about the emotions, right? And so emotions, I don't even want to talk about it so much because it's so complicated. The podcast is great. It's phenomenal. But it's so complicated. Like, just because you're showing, and you can kind of relate this to the science, just because you're smiling doesn't mean that you're happy, right? Doesn't mean, just because you're frowning doesn't mean that you're mad, or, you know, sad or mad. But these emotions are these big buckets that you kind of put a label to the emotion that you're feeling, or not emotion, but like the state of what your body is in at that moment, chemically and like through hormones and mentally, through the electrical pulses in the neurons. But it's the more knowledge that you actually know from words of being able to describe certain emotions, the better off you're going to be. Because let's say that you kind of have a weird feeling waking up. You're not like very, like, you're not super motivated, but you're not very tired either. And it's like a weird state that you're in. As soon as you label what you're feeling, your mind's already adjusting to that big bucket that you've put or labeled that emotion as opposed to maybe it could have been a completely different feeling, right? But let's say you categorize it into a different category that's very broad, and you can just say, oh, like, I think I feel upset, right? But you didn't really feel upset. You know, you were tired, you weren't super motivated, but if you knew the right word to really label yourself in the moment of what you're feeling, you're doing yourself more of a justice to be able to not imply any other emotions or feedback that goes along with the label, because your brain likes to label stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, emotions don't necessarily have, there's so much emotions or states that your body go through that it's hard to label it. But the more that you know, the more powerful that you will be, because you actually get to put that label that's more adequately relevant to the emotion that you're feeling. And so you're not adding anything extra or taking anything away. So, but again, it's still applying it, right? It's still applying the knowledge of the emotional states that you know based on the context, and using that to describe yourself, how am I feeling right now in this moment, to really get an accurate representation of what really you are, to be able to even fight it, right? To be able to combat it. Okay, why am I feeling this way? Okay, let me think about this further. What can I do to feel differently about this? You know,
You're saying kind of like, if you label it right with a correct term, or at least what's correct to you, then maybe next time that happens, it's like, it's kind of like less uncertainty and anxiety, maybe, because you don't know what you're experiencing.
That's exactly it. Yes, yes. And that's exactly what they're saying, because the mind hates being uncertain. Like, the brain really hates that. They want to, exactly what I was saying, they want to categorize, they want to label. And if you're always in a state of uncertainty, dude, oh my God, how hard is it going to be? Like imagine like walking through a door, right? We just walked into the podcast door and we're like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to be in here, right? Well, I mean, you can get an idea. Okay, well, we said podcast room, there's probably going to be some mics, there's going to be some stuff. But imagine you had like no idea, right? Like, of any door that you open, that's really scary, dude. Yeah. Imagine you don't know. Every time you open the door, you can't even predict what's going to be on the other side. You know, like, out of school, you know, you'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to open a door. It might be a classroom, right? I'm predicting that. But, like, there's, like, a dungeon, right? You're like, whoa, how did I get here? You know, like, how'd that happen? You know, it's like, whoa. It's like, imagine being in a state of uncertainty all the time. And that's, yes, so, yeah, labeling is learning all the vocabulary you can for the emotional states, which I am going to start working on, because I don't have a very good foundation of like states of emotion. But I think it's going to be very relevant and really important as I go on in life, to be able to really put myself in how I'm feeling, what category I'm in.
I think that'll help you with everything, you know, just in everyday life, like motivation. And yeah, it's good to know like what you're feeling, because I think nowadays with a lot of people, you know, they are very uncertain, uncertain.
Yeah.
And I think it causes a lot of anxiety, you know. Yeah. And then you see all these people on, you know, antidepressants, anti-anxiety meds, you know, self-medicating with, you know, whatever amount of drugs and stuff. So it's like, yeah, I think that's a big problem nowadays, you know.
Well, it's the same thing, dude. And I think a lot of our generation, we're Gen Zers. Unfortunately, I don't know. I think there's like negative connotation to it.
Unfortunately, you know? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But I think it's like the same factor. If you go back into, if you sleep enough, I don't think enough people are sleeping enough. If you eat right, I don't think enough people are eating right. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just eating in and out all day or whatever. If you do exercise, I don't think you're doing exercise, you know. And most people that you might say are more inclined on a depressed scale, they're probably not doing these.
100%.
And they're going straight for medication, where it's like, dude, work on those three things. You don't need these mind hacks or tools that, you know, which are phenomenal, right, that you learn in neuroscience or psychology. If you just do those three things, you'll be way better off. But yeah, like a lot of people are resorting to medication, which we talk about usually when we hang out all the time. Yeah. I think it's going to be it's a really bad epidemic, and unfortunately, like, if you're a pilot, right, you take some sort of pill or medication to like help you for depressant, like especially if you're for like depressants or antidepressants, you can't fly.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, you're not allowed to fly.
I guess that makes sense, but I did not know that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, they're trying to fight it. A lot of people are trying to fight it because it's like, oh, they're seeking help.
Just because it's so common nowadays, too. Yeah, it's probably becoming increasingly harder.
But it shouldn't.
No, I agree. Yeah, I 100% agree with you.
It's like they're not working the ladder, right? I was learning that in jiu-jitsu, too. Like, if you want to pin someone down to the floor, and they're kind of like their back's on the floor, maybe their legs are up trying to defend you. You know, there's a process. It's the instructions. So 1, 2, 3, right? Step one, take control of their ankles or their feet. Step two, now that you've covered that, still control that. Go up to the knees. Now that you have that or you have an opening, go to the hips. Now you've controlled the person. Now you have them inside control, and then you can go to a mount, you know, and do what you need to go. But there's a process, right? Or like for different moves in jiu-jitsu, as long as you understand the principle of like for takedowns, it's really moving the head and moving the shoulder down. Because now that that's unstable, then you're able to take advantage of the posture that they're in and the vulnerability. But it's like, if you know the steps, right, then there's so many variables in life, right? Like the screw like falling into the cockpit or the same aircraft mechanic scenario I was giving, or the bolt is stripped or whatever. There's a lot of scenarios. But if you know the fundamentals, like eating, you know, sleeping, getting enough exercise,
it's going to make everything infinitely easier.
Right? Yeah. And you won't have to, you know, I mean, there's of course people that need medication. We'll say that right now. And we're not like, we're not in the medical field or anything. We're business
people.
Yeah,
we're not, this is not medical
advice.
Yeah,
this is not, please don't, yeah, don't follow this. But there's so many people that, like, same thing, like, if you listen to other people's advice, and like for like neuro, like a neuroscientist, for example, they, you know, they'll say, or he'll bring a lot of people, same guy, he'll bring a lot of people in. It's the same factors over and over again.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't speak on a lot of other people's experience, but, one thing I will say, at least for myself, is that, when I was in high school, actually, I was diagnosed with like general anxiety disorder, you know, mm-hmm. that's what they said I had. And they actually gave me this medication that I won't mention on the podcast. It's just an antidepressant. It's very common. There's probably a lot of people on it, especially nowadays. And, you know, they told me, they're like, yeah, you know, take this, you know, once a day, right? And after a few weeks, it'll start to build up in your system, right? And you're going to start feeling better. And I want to say it was probably 6 months I was doing it. And I was doing exactly like they were saying, right? Taking it, you know, consistently, exactly as the doctor ordered, right? As yeah. they say. And I started feeling worse, honestly. Like, I was feeling worse and worse. And finally, I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to try to do the opposite of what they're telling me, you know? And they told me, they're always like, you know, never stop this, like, without talking to us first, you know, and make sure we wean you off and all this and all that. And I was like, you know what? I mean, you know, I'm not advocating this, but I'm saying what they were telling me wasn't working, so I wanted to try something else, you know? Mm. And so I stopped doing it. And I want to say it was about a week or two later, and I already started feeling better.
That's
you know?
Crazy, dude.
And the motivation started to come back. You know, it's almost like the medication kind of put me in like a state of like perpetual, like I don't, you know, I don't know if this is the right way to describe it, but like okayness. Mm. Like it almost makes you like
mid.
Okay.
You're like
yeah.
Mid.
Like
yeah.
okay with what's going on. Yeah. It's like I was, you know, lacking in other areas of my life, you know, that I should have been putting more effort and work into, you know. And before, I think that was almost what was causing the anxiety, right? Because I didn't have those things on point. So it was making me uncertain about my life and kind of like, you know, oh crap, like what's going to happen, you know? And then that causes the anxiety, right? And then instead of, you know, dealing with the root of the problem, you know, they gave me this medication, which is almost like a Band-Aid, right? Over, instead of a, you know, stitches, right? Or instead of getting to the root of the problem, you're just kind of covering up the problem. And so it kind of put me in like a state of like perpetual, yeah, like just like, oh yeah, you know, I'm okay with everything going on. But then I started having side effects, you know, and I think, you know, again, everybody's different, so I can't speak for everybody, but it was almost like my body was like, you know, this isn't like what we should be doing. You know, it was almost like it was trying to tell me, you know, like this isn't really helping you, right? It's kind of just covering things up, you know. So then I think it got worse as time went on, you know. And then finally, yeah, I stopped it, and it's like, dude, I start to feel better, you know. And then wow. motivation comes back, and it's like the reverse of the vicious cycle. It's like a positive cycle where you start to feel better, and then you do more things for yourself, and then more things and more things, and it just gets better and better, you know. Yeah. So everybody's different, you know, but I would just say, you know, don't just take everything that the medical industry just tells you, just instant fact, right?
Yeah.
Like you should try to, you know, like be an independent thinker and do your own research, you know, and really analyze, like, you know, be in tune with your emotions, like you said, yeah. and just your body and see, like, is this really helping me? Do I feel better? Do I feel worse? You know? And then the biggest thing over all of that, I would say, is that you need to get the basic things in your life on point, like you were saying, like, you know, eating right, sleeping, you know, exercising, you know, not spending too much time on social media or, you know, TV, like doing things that are actually good for you, you know. And I would say do that first and then see how you feel after that, right? Don't yeah. just jump into the medication yeah. and you're like, oh, you know, like this is going to solve everything, right? I think you need to get the other stuff in your life on point first. And I think if a lot more people did that, then I think they would notice a big difference in their lives, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think enough people kind of aren't taking like accountability, you know, they're kind of just saying like, oh, you know, I don't know why I feel anxious or depressed, you know? And it's like, I mean, you know, if you really analyze your life, I think you could find some things where it's like, yeah. you know, that if you change, I'm not calling anyone out, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just saying like, I learned this too. It's like, I think if you really analyze your life and it's like, why am I depressed, right? It's like, well, maybe I'm, yeah, like I said, not doing all these things, you know? It's like, so I start doing all these things and even doing more for myself. It's like, I think a lot of people aren't going to feel nearly as depressed or anxious if they do that stuff, mm-hmm. you know? At least that's what I've noticed.
Yeah. So, like, I would say, or would argue, get medical advice, right? We're not doctors, but maybe ask your doctor or clinician, like, hey, is there any steps that I can take before taking medication right away? Like, is there anything I can change in my daily habit now? And then if I'm not feeling better, maybe I do need medication, right? But is there a possibility where we can try something out where I can feel better? And really, it's understanding your body, like you were saying, being in tune with your emotions. If you need to really, and that's a really good skill to have, and it's going to take you anywhere in life, you know, any field. If you are really in tune with it, then you're going to be able to know. And like you're saying, analyzing yourself, kind of know, okay, what things can I try before maybe going into a prescription or something?
Because anxiety and depression, like what I've learned 1,000% is that it's your body trying to tell you something.
Yeah.
Right? And like you said, I don't disagree. I think there is a small minority of people where, you know, this stuff is either genetic or, you know, there's a specific reason for it happening that doesn't involve, you know, stuff.
Any external factors that you can work on. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I so I think it's really your body trying to tell you something, you mm-hmm. know, and it's really hard to listen and understand what that is, you know, because I do think it's different for a lot of people, but I do think there's a lot of common things like we talked about that a lot of people can do, you know, that are really going to help them, you know. And so I think, you know, these days we kind of just throw medication at every problem, you know,
because
you know, medication, a lot of medication nowadays, like modern medicine, is very helpful, you know, and you know, so I think people almost trust it too much. You know, they just think, oh, like this is going to make everything better, you know, like whatever the medical industry tells me is instantly correct, you know, and I'm not saying it's not, obviously, but like, I mean, we have seen a lot of instances where it's like, you know, these pharmaceutical companies, it's money, right? Mm-hmm. These are big corporations that are focused on money. I mean, look at like Purdue Pharma with like OxyContin back in the 90s. I mean, they basically pushed this pill on everybody. Then they said like, yeah, like this isn't addictive, right? This is going to help you with your chronic pain. This is going to save people's lives. And I mean, look at it. It's not the only thing, but it was a big factor in creating like the opiate crisis that we have nowadays with all these hundreds of thousands of overdose deaths, you know?
Yeah.
And that was all from corporate greed, right? And misinformation towards people. So all I'm saying is that, you know, and I'm not saying antidepressants are like that, but what I am saying is that, you know, I would just take everything that pharmaceutical industry says with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just
or look at alternatives before, like, ask before, like, is there anything I can do before going in and grabbing that or getting prescribed?
Yeah.
Right.
It's okay to be skeptical. I think it's good to be skeptical to an extent.
I think it's good to be curious.
Yeah.
You know, if there's anything else you can do. Because, you know, think about it as a monetary thing. It's going to be expensive. You know, you're going to do better if you just get more sleep. That's free. You know, you're going to do better if you eat. And that might be expensive, right?
Yeah.
You know, getting the right foods in your body. But I would say you would get a great return on your investment.
Oh, 1,000%.
Right. Yeah. As opposed to just being dependent on a prescription that you might not necessarily need.
Exactly.
Right.
It's like a lot of these prescriptions have like a lot of side effects, you know, like we all know that, you know, I mean, I know that from experience, like there's a lot of like weird side effects, right? Because these aren't natural things, right? Right. And I'm not saying that they're not.
Well, they are natural in a way, but it's like you're imbalancing what your chemical like and hormonal balances in your body already.
Well, yeah. But like, you know how like some of them, they are synthetic medications,
yes.
You know? Yeah. So it's like basically the way I look at it is like, what would you rather do, right? Take something that, you know, you're not necessarily like, it's not like really like a natural thing for you to take, right? Or would you rather do things, you know, that are people have been doing for thousands of years, you know, and that, you know, you look at successful people and people that aren't depressed or aren't on medication, you know, they have all these things in line most of the time, right? You know, they have good relationships. Like, you know, I won't go over the whole list again, but, you know, it's core things that make a big difference, you know? And I think, you have to really analyze your life and be like, oh, like, you know, am I spending all this time on Instagram? You know, am I, you know, doing all these things that just are, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to dopamine too, you know, and how you feel. Cause you know, people's dopamine levels nowadays are so messed up because they're just, it's all about instant pleasure nowadays, right? You know, drugs, social media, you know, fast food, right?
Yeah.
Quick food that's terrible for you. It's like all this stuff is just, it's messing up people's dopamine levels. So then their base level, you know, is so high that all these normal things don't even feel fun to them anymore. And then it screws up their motivation, right? And that's where it kind of full circle goes back to like a lot of, like when I was saying a lot of people, they're okay with just being in like minimum wage jobs, you know, and kind of just being a slave to, you know, I guess you could say the matrix, so to speak, right? And I think a lot of
like
it goes back to that.
Complacency.
Yeah. It's like the okayness, just perpetual, just being okay with, you know, and I'm not calling it around, but I'm saying kind of like, you know, I won't say a loser, but I'll say like really not deeply satisfied with your life, right? Because I don't think anyone who does that is going to be deeply satisfied with their life, you know? So, yeah, that's pretty much what I would say about it.
Yeah, like, you don't want to be on your deathbed and be like, I wish I would have done this, you know?
Yes.
Like, I feel like you'd rather be on your deathbed and be like, you know, at least I tried it and I knew it was, you know, and it didn't work, right? I think you'd be way more happy to at least thought that you've tried it. And,
yeah.
Or maybe you do try it. And I think anyone can do anything. I'm pretty optimistic. Grant and I, as part of a business exercise, we did the something called the 16 personalities test. And I'm very, very optimistic. And I think, like, people can, like, do anything. I'll look at someone and they're just a ball of, like, limitless, like, power and potential. Like, just something that can go out and do anything that they set, like, their mind to. And, like, I, like, firmly believe that, you know. Like, I guess that's just my personality trait. Like, I firmly believe people have so much they can do in their life and do extraordinary miracles and things that might be almost supernatural, you know. But it's, like believing in them that they're just, like, a clean slate, you know. You can always start over and do something for yourself. Now, that sometimes goes into, like, well, like, you know, hold down now, you know. Not everyone thinks like that, you know. It's like some people do have certain things that they got to work on. They can't just, like, get over it right away.
100%.
You know, there's stuff that that takes time to be able to get to where that needs to be. And I was going to relate that to my point, and I forgot. We were talking about something and I forgot.
Oh, no worries. Yeah. I know you were talking about the personality test. You're talking about how people are like a limitless ball of, like,
yeah,
potential.
No, but before the.
Oh, what I was saying last?
Yes.
I know we were talking about the medication stuff, yes. Right? And doing the stuff for your life that, yeah. You know, that that's going to help you. But other than that,
well,
I don't really remember.
There's so much that you can do, and you definitely are capable of doing it, you know.
Well, you were saying about when people are on their deathbed,
yes,
like, yeah, like, you'd be happier knowing that you at least tried versus not trying.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So it's like go out and do it, man. And there we go. Now I remember. Yeah, thank you.
Got you.
Like, odds are, if you really put your mind to it, you're gonna be able to accomplish it, right? But even if you can't. Oh, well, man. Oh,
yeah, at least you tried. That's more than most people can say. I feel like so many times, like, with those people we were talking about, you know, being okay with just, you know, not reaching their full potential, right? Because I think everybody has, like you said, like, limitless potential, you know, depending on what you do and how you put your mind to it. But, you know, I kind of forgot what I was saying too.
No, people have limitless potential, and it's better to try something as opposed to. To not doing it, and is that helping you recollect?
Man,
what
that's
what
like, how do you know how it is? Sometimes it just pops out of your head.
I'm sure, and you know what? That's a really cool state of feeling to know the word to, you know, because I'm sure there's, and I was talking or in the podcast as well that I was listening to. It's like just one language isn't enough sometimes to explain the state of feeling that you're in. Like, there's other. Stuff culturally that gets that has been repeated so much that people make a word for it, or like an emotion and stuff. So, like, imagine if anyone knows what the word is when you're on a trail and you lose that trail of thought, let us know, because that might actually help knowing what state that you're in to be able to then go back on the horse and keep going.
Yeah.
But see, that's an example. That's a real world example.
Yeah. It's interesting
that we need to work on, because if we find out the word, you know, I'm sure that's gonna help us a lot in our life, you know, and just like any other instances, right?
Yeah.
But that's funny. I think this is a good place to stop. We've gone for an hour and 10 minutes, so yeah, that's been pretty decent, and we covered everything. We covered pretty much what the podcast is about: aviation, business, personal growth. Without even thinking about it, too. So I was like, "Oh, that's kind of cool that we did that." Yeah. Is there any final thoughts or comments you want to add or share before?
Man, it was really cool to do this. You know, I've never been on a podcast before. I've watched them for a long time, so I've always really wanted to be on one. You know, and it was really cool that you reached out to me. You know, and invited me on, so I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's such a cool feel. Like, it's cool because it's like an environment where you're able to share ideas and bounce stuff back and forth, you know. And I mean, we've been friends for a very long time, so it's very natural for us to talk and get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, this does definitely look really cool experience getting the mics and everything set up.
Yeah, it's cool because it, like, you know, you get kind of lost in the conversation in a good way, you know, yeah. And then it's like you almost forget you're on a podcast and it's just like a cool, cool conversation flow, you know, which I really like.
Yeah.
You know, definitely. That's why it was really cool that we got to do this together, you know, because like you said, we, you know, we're doing the business together. We talk all the time, you know, so it's like, yeah, it doesn't feel forced, you know, versus like if you went to some other podcast, you know, and you're kind of like, oh, I'm nervous, you know, I don't know how it's going to be, what the questions are going to be, what the environment's going to be like. So it's like, this is a very like chill, like laid back environment, you know, and it was awesome.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you coming in on. That means a lot. So, well, this has been the, any way you want people to reach out to you or anything? You can shout out the business email if you want.
Oh, yeah, man. Honestly.
Or your Instagram, whatever.
Yeah, man. I'm not on social media too much, but I will say follow Davis Vending Co. on Instagram.
Yeah.
We post on there twice a week. We got some really cool AI posts and environmental stuff and some really cool stuff that's, I think, entertaining. And keep an eye out for us. We're coming up.
Yeah, up and coming. Yeah. All right, man. Well, pleasure doing this with you, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate you.
All right. This is... The From Ground to Great podcast, your host, Daniel Ruiz Jimenez, signing off.